Good morning, everyone. I think we're on page 494, maybe line 218. This is book 7, the book of yoga, canto 3, the entry into the inner countries. And Savitri has been advised by a higher voice that she has to look into herself and find her soul in matter's body, in the physical body. And she has passed through the subconscious, subtle physical realm, stifling the realm of tiny, conflicting, elemental beings and impulses, the level of the senses. And that was a very painful experience, as if she's being carried along in a crowded street by a rushing crowd, conflicting crowd. She has to summon up all her will and focus on the Savior name in order to hold herself out of this state, which seems to threaten even madness. So there's a short interlude of peace, but then comes rushing this giant head of life force, which Mother has depicted as a dragon, a huge dragon of life force. And we have not yet completed the description, quite long description, of the characteristics of that life force. We were reading that it can carry away the mind. It gives an illusion of high inspiration and infallibility. Even divine discernment, but this is not genuine. All this knowledge is a borrowed sound, and they can be very misleading. So on the backs of these beautiful life horses with their shining rainbow-colored manes, falsehood could ride. And in this vast urge, truth lay with delight in error's passionate arms, gliding downstream in a blithe, gilded barge. She, truth, edged her ray with a magnificent lie. So I think that's where we stopped.
Yeah?
Yes.
So we'll go on from there. Bon, you like to begin?
Yes. Here, in life, the third at present, or comparison, and touches from what with the bandaged eyes and ignorance is instanted at home here. Those cherubim put in their inserted into the dear skin could appear to a dangerous intermediate term. Their death walks wearing a robe of the deathless blood. When they enter the belly of the wandering stream, coiling forever in the snare of time, their bodies form out of some immediate wound. Ensnared thus live in the lunar frame, then perish vomiting the immortal soul out of memory. not.
Thank you. Life's nether realms, the lower realms of life. Yes, he spoke about these manes he imaged the life mind or the life influence in the mind as horses with wonderful thoughts streaming like rainbow colored manes from their necks. No? But then he says they can imitate the gallop of intuition. So he's continuing this horse image. And here he says those galloping hooves of those horses of the mind carried away by the life force can get carried into this dangerous intermediate zone. Aurobindo has written about this very dangerous place, the valley of the wandering gleam, in some important letters.
What is gleam?
A gleam. A gleam of light. But a little gleam, a little light. And sometimes in marshy places, there at twilight when the night comes, we can see lights. We may think they are lights borne by human beings, or that there is a village or houses. But these lights, they move around. They are wandering gleams. They're called will-o'-the-wisp in the English folklore. Misleading lights. This is not the steady ray from above, the ray of truth. This is the wandering gleam of falsehood and illusion. So this is a very dangerous zone, an in-between zone, where death walks wearing a robe of deathless life, seems to be offering immortality and endless life. And the souls who get trapped in that region, who get misled by that, or made captive or victims of the specious ray, not the ray of truth, but a ray which is pretending to be, which is misleading. It's possible for souls to get trapped there. He says, never can escape. They are not. The soul should be master of the nature, but these souls are no longer masters. They become agents of life, of the lower life impulses. They serve life's desires. And that goes from one life to the next life, toiling forever in the snare of time. These, they put on those poor souls, they put on bodies born out of some nothingness, illusory bodies. But those bodies present wonderful dreams, fulfilling the life's desires. They ensnare the spirit. And then they perish, they die, and that soul is vomited out into nothingness, the drain of nothingness. So it's a very, very dangerous realm. The next passage tells us how we can escape, avoid being trapped. Alice, you would read?
Yet some uncaught, unslain, can rarely pass, carrying truth's image in the sheltered heart. pluck knowledge out of error's screaming grip, break paths through the blind walls of little self, then travel on to reach a greater life. All this streamed past her and seemed to her vision sight as if around a high and voiceless isle, a clamor of waters from far unknown hills swallowed its narrow banks in crowding waves and made a hungry world of white wild foam. Hastening, a dragon with a million feet, its foam and cry of drunken giants dim, tossing a mane of darkness into God's sky. It ebbed, receding into a distant world.
Thank you. This first sentence parallels a passage in book 2, canto 8, I think, canto 7 or canto 8, where King Aswapati has to descend into the universal lower life planes, the planes of nether life. And Shobindo says that the traveler on the upward way has to pass very near to the gates of hell. And that's a very dangerous passage, but the way to, well, one has to be very, very vigilant and keep on one's lips. I think there also the Savior name comes. So the Aswapati is able to do that. Or he has to go even further down and into the total darkness. So Savitri sees all this passing, this great flood. I don't know how it happened, but this week I have seen some films of these flash floods coming in the desert. And you see a sort of wave of water approaching, and then with such enormous force it comes and washes everything away. So it's something like that, but it streams past her, and in her vision, it's as if she's on a high island, a high silent island, and this clamor, this noisy flood of waters coming from unknown hills in the distance, swallowing up the narrow banks with these crow waves, spreads everywhere, makes a hungry world of white, white foam bubbling because it's travelling so fast. It's like a dragon with a million feet. And the noise that it makes is like a drunken giant din. And it's also, well, it's maybe it's a dragon with a mane. It has a mane of darkness. It tosses up. It's such a giant head of light. But it ebbs, like the tide going out. That flood gets exhausted, fades away into a distant roar. So then again, there's an experience of peace. Lorraine.
Okay, so it's better.
Top of page 4 now.
Then smiled again a large and tranquil air. Blue heaven, green earth, partners of beauty's reign, lived as of old, companions in happiness. And in the world's heart laugh the joy of life. All now is still. The soil shone dry and pure. Through it all she moved not, plunged not in the vain waves, out of the vastness of the silent self. Life eyes clamored fled. Her spirit was mute and free.
All this is happening in her silence. That's where this landscape is. That's where this flood has come in. But now it has passed. It's left everything washed clean and pure. It's as if the earth is smiling again after a big storm. And Savitri's, through all this, her spirit has remained silent. But now it's free. It's free from all that clamor, that attack almost of the life force. So then she moves on to a new stage.
Then Jermaine forward through the cell's wide hush. She came into a brilliant, ordered space. There, life dwelt, parked in an arm. Tranquility. A chain was on her strong, insurgent heart, tamed to the modesty of a major pace. She kept no more her vehement stride and rush. She had lost the careless majesty of her muse and the ample grandeur of her regal force. Curved were her mighty palms, her splendid waist, her splendid waist. Sobered the revels of her bacchant play. Cut down were her squanderings in desire's bazaar. Coursed her despot will, her fancy's dance. A cold stolidity bound the riot of sense.
Vehement, it means insistent, insisting loudly on something. You can also move forward vehement with great determination and energy. Well, this is still a realm of life, but it's very different. It's, life has been tamed. She's dwelling as if in a park, an area which is fenced round and protected. And there are guards to make sure that everything is quiet and orderly and no disturbances. And this strong heart of life, which is so rebellious, insurgent, is chained down. And that vehement stride and rush of all the life force has been lost. It's been tamed to the modesty of a measured pace. As a princess may walk in her park. She doesn't run and shout and scream. She walks modestly. She's also lost that careless majesty of her muse. What we read about last week, the way that the imagination of life, how richly and widely it can explore. That's gone. The ample grandeur of her regal pace. She is no longer in charge here. Somebody's making sure that she doesn't overspend, squanderings. She could spend all her energy fulfilling her desires and fancies. But now something is controlling that. There's a budget and she can't overspend her budget. That will of hers, will that masterly will which ruled everything, this has got another power, has taken charge, it's been coerced her will and has shaped, cut down her fancy's dance. So that riot of the senses, which was typical of the free force of life, now is bound, tied by a cold stolidity. Somebody who's stolid is they are very slow to react, seem to have nothing moves them. Too stable. This is a cold stolidity, there's no warm responses anymore.
What's Bacchant?
Sorry?
What is Bacchant?
Bacchant. This is the adjective from the Roman god of wine, Bacchus. And he's depicted in art rioting, a bit like this, what we read in the last section, with his wild animals and his attendants, and they're all drinking and they're drunk and they're rioting around. It's a revel. It is a symbol, perhaps a rather degraded symbol, for the divine intoxication. It says all those revels have been sobered down. It's not a wild party anymore. All very proper.
So the pronunciation is Bacchant?
Bacchant, yeah. And we have... here we have it as an adjective. We also, I think, have the word Bacchantes. That's the female worshippers of Bacchus. Bacchanal is there. Yes, the Bacchanal. That's these revels. The moving party of Bacchus with his worshippers. And Bacchus is the Latin equivalent of the Greek Dionysus. He is the god who has brought the wine and the cultivation of the vine. So we find the words Dionysian. It's also an adjective for this divine intoxication.
And bazaar is an English word?
I thought it was an Indian
word. It's an Indian word.
So, yes, you go to the bazaar and you buy all the beautiful things that you see. Squanderings, when you waste your resources. So he's going to describe how it has come to be like that.
Royalty without freedom was a lot. The sovereign throne obeyed her ministers, her servant mind and sense governed her house, her spirits bound, they cast in rigid lines, and guiding with her phalanx of armored rules, the reason's balanced reign kept order and peace, her will lived close in adamant walls of law. Quote, watch her force by chains that pend to Arun. Imagination was prison in a front.
In a fort.
In a fort. Her wanton and licentious favorite. Reality's poise and reason's symmetry were set in its place, sentineled by martial facts. They gave to the soul for throne of bench of law, for kingdom a small world of rule and life. The ages wisdom shriveled to scholar's lines, shrank patterned into a copybook device. The spirit's almighty freedom was not here. A schoolman mind had captured life's last phase, but choose to live in bare and paltry rooms, part of from the too vast, dangerous universe, fearing to lose its soul in the infinite.
Okay. So it's the reason that has taken hold. It's good governing and controlling. So he described what had happened when life is allowed to carry the mind away on its horses. This is what happens when the mind dominates over the life force. He images her as a queen, but a queen who, well, she's royal, but it doesn't mean that she rules anymore. She's like a constitutional monarch. She has to obey her ministers, and she has to follow the way that her servants organize her house. And the senses and the mind, they are casting everything in very rigid lines and with rules, what is allowed and what is not allowed. They are guarding the reason's balanced reign. In this way, they are keeping order and peace. So that free will of the powerful creative life force is closed. It's bounded in, limited by these adamant walls of law. Adamant walls are very, very strong. And she's actually in chains. They are pretending to be adornments, but actually they are chains imprisoning her. And especially imagination. Imagination is such a favorite of the life force. But just like those old queens, if the ministers took charge, they would imprison her favorite in thought so that she cannot meet him. So he is too loose in his behavior, too licentious, too not given to enjoyment. Instead, there's this poise of the reason, what effects of reality. Setting place. This is how things are. Sorry, I didn't come here properly.
It's a different image from the Bhagavad Gita. There's a Arjuna called the horses.
Yes. Krishna holds the.
Krishna holds the chariot.
Krishna guides the chariot. So there we are told that if Krishna is driving your chariot, then you can't go wrong. The reason is not Krishna. But here it's more the image of a kingdom. The queen is there, but she is not ruling. She is ruled by her. She's ruled by her ministers, her servants. They are the ones who are in control. In this way, the life force is tamed. Kept within limits. We might think that this is all very well, but Schrodinger shows us that it has disadvantages also. That when we limit the life force, we also limit the soul. They gave to the soul for throne. Instead of enthroning the soul, they enthrone life, but under these limits. And they control her with this bench of law, like the judge sits on the bench. And her kingdom is very limited, with borders and rules. And that makes everything small, even the things of the mind. the age's wisdom gets dried up into scholiast lines, not scholarly or too scholarly, so that just a few tags and hints of the wisdom of the ages have been put there as a copybook device. I don't know whether you had to do this when you went to school, but when I was perhaps 8 or 9, we had, for practicing handwriting, we had books with full of good sayings that you had to copy, with the idea that all they go into your mind and you not forget them for the rest of your life. So this is actually a very poor use of the wisdom of the ages, drying it up into a copybook device.
It's still like that in formal schools.
Yeah, you have to do it. I don't want to denigrate the practice altogether. It's one can copy beautiful lines of poetry and so on, but it's not the best way of using those lines of poetry, perhaps. Not of honoring them properly.
So, somehow the advice of these lines is that a reason is not the best guide for human beings?
I think the message of this whole canto is that the soul is the true guide for human beings. But as we explore on our way, we may pass through these different stages. In order to be free, the soul can't be subjected to the demands of the subtle physical, and yes, I've come to you, sir, and can't be carried away by the senses or by the larger life impulses, and the mind shouldn't be misled by the vital. But and perhaps this parked tranquility might correspond to a kind of sattvic state, but it's not enough. It's not enough for the soul. Yes.
I think somewhere in this whole para, the emphasis is on restricting the life force by the faculty of reason, or it is overshadowing of mind, which is
no. It's here. What he's stressing on is the restriction of reason, the governing of reason, the governing of life by reason.
Not overshadowing mind.
No.
In the Savitri dictionary, it says scholiast means after the fashion of one who sets down commentary on ancient classical texts. So perhaps it's not just one who copies the thing, but in other words, in the age's wisdom is shriveled up to just making commentaries on the past. It doesn't apply it to the future, present or the future.
We are supposed to read Savitri for ourselves. So Shadavan on Sundays dares to make commentaries on it. But one shouldn't allow these commentaries to take the place of the poem itself. You have to be very careful about that. But he was speaking about the governing of life. But here he says this governing of life by the reason, it affects the soul also.
Yeah.
And it affects, it reduces the possibilities of the spirit. And this schoolman mind, this petty, too rational mind, has taken over, captured life's large space, but it doesn't make full use of that. It chooses to live in these bare and paltry rooms instead of being full of gorgeous tapestries and beautiful works of art, plain, small, whitewashed rooms. That's where the... And that's parked off, delimited, protected from the too dangerous universe.
I got my mind really open the other night when Alok Pandey was commenting on a poem by Subramanya Bharati. It's called Kannan, My Disciple. Have you ever heard of it? Well, he was telling the English translation from the Tamil. So the idea of the poem is that the teachers of this world, they tend to think that they are to tell people the truth. They're to be the intermediary for explaining the truth. But he said, actually, it's like telling Krishna. Krishna is this whole world. So you are,
they are telling
you have made
Kannan,
you have made Krishna your disciple. So the other day I had the experience where I work in an art gallery connected with ashram, that this group of youngsters came from a local school. So I saw that some of the other guides that were telling them this, you know, don't put your hands on the walls, don't touch the pictures, and I thought, I think I'm just going to watch and just make sure there's no trouble, but I'm going to let's see what happens. So then they were showing each other. They were telling the ones, don't touch the picture. The children were telling. You see, they say children are the best teachers. Mm. But the other thing is that they were commenting themselves on what was there. And so I was just interacting with them, and I was saying, oh, you know, look at... And then they would come and ask me. If they asked me something, I would say something. But I thought, what an interesting experience I had with those youngsters, instead of just being the school marm, you know? It was interesting. Because this is what happened when the reason... I hope I don't offend anybody by saying this, but I think it's a problem in Europe today that they are trying to use the reason on this migrant crisis, and they're trying to say so many people here, so many people there. But I told somebody, it's like trying to tell the squirrels at Samadhi, okay, we're going to make quotas, and only you, so many squirrels can run in this corner and that corner. Like they're going to run anywhere all over. So it is like... you know, life is beyond reason.
Yeah. It was not only the idea of quotas, they said mandatory quotas.
Yes, they have no right to decide where they want to go.
You know, because immediately everybody's backs are up. Mandatory quotas, no. You know? And how can they enforce anyway?
Yeah, I like what the Chinese artist Wei Wei, he said, this is a human problem, not a political problem. And if they looked at it that way, they would see it entirely different.
And some people are seeing it that way. And then it's just marvelous how human sympathies are being expressed so generously. It's remarkable, surprising.
Yes, so much generosity, and the other side, so much rigidity, only because people are afraid.
Anyway, perhaps what the reason does, or the true rational reason, is that it fears to lose its soul in the infinite, to lose grasp of things, lose control, to get carried away.
Even the ideas ample sweep was cut into a system, chained to fixed pillars of thought, or riveted to matter's solid ground, or else the soul was lost in its own heights, obeying the ideals high or low. Thought based a throne on unsubstantial air, disdaining earth like triviality. It bear reality out to breathe in its dreams, or all a step into a system universe. Life's empire was managed continent. Its thoughts an army rank and discipline. Uniform, they kept the logic of their fixed place at the binding of the trained centurion mind.
Thank you. The idea with a capital I, the original creative idea.
Anything to ask?
Yeah, this is a part, then we can speak a little bit about, or else the soul was lost in its own heights.
He explains it in the next line. It loses touch with reality. It disdains Earth's flat reality, triviality. It separates itself from the earthly reality as too trivial. It bars reality out to live in its dreams.
But this ideal,
yes,
this ideals, is, I don't know, but it seems to me it's a projection of our wanting to know what is the ultimate, and the ideal is changing, it's moving, it is not
fixed.
So it never is grasped, except in this consciousness of its changing.
Ideals are the mind's, or the reason's even, formulation of the idea, the creative idea. So, according to the mind, we formulate certain ideals which are important to us. But as you say, they shouldn't become too rigid. There has to be always this interplay, wonderful interplay, between the ideal that we're aiming for and the reality. And if we bar out the reality, then we lose touch with how the ideal could be implemented. Here in Oregon, we say the ideal is mother wanted a moneyless economy for Oregon. And we try in various mentalized ways to imitate that ideal, because we are living too much in our dreams. We are not looking at what is the... Well, we are compelled then to deal with Earth's flat triviality and the rule of money and all that. But that prevents us from really finding the way to implement this particular ideal. And Mother was so marvelous at uniting this, the goal and the practical way to reach it. And with our limited minds, we can't, we're not very good at that. And we cling on to our ideals, it should be like this, and perhaps miss what life would show us if we hadn't parked her off with our reason.
So this ideal, capitalized, is us, is our projection.
Our formulations.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. But it's something high and something to be aimed at. No? Life would try to live that ideal. But here, it's a thought based on, thrown on unsubstantial air. It just thinks out its airy rules and reality ideas, trying to escape from the demands of the earth. I think these three things that we read about the idea and the ideal, and then about life's empire, this is what happens when the free life force is too much controlled by the reason, or by the reason on alone, not illumined by the light of the soul, the free spirit. So life has this huge empire, you know, but now under the control of the reason, it becomes a managed continent. It's false, the way that the life mind thinks, becomes this ranked and disciplined army. They each, they're in their uniforms and they're keeping their logic of their fixed place, and they are commanded by the mind, the centurion. The centurion is not the general, he's not the leader of the army. He's
only in charge of 100 soldiers. I don't know what we would call him today, a sergeant major or something. He's not a very high-ranking officer, so you can't expect him to have the overall picture. Is that where we stopped?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And Marie's going to read this.
Or he stepped into a station like a star, or marched through fixed and constellated heavens, or kept its true rank among its peers in the sky's unchanging cosmetic hierarchy, or like a high-bred maiden with chaste eyes, forbidden to walk unveiled the public ways. She must in close secure chambers move, the feeling in cloisters live for garden thoughts. Life was consigned to a safe level path. It dared not attempt the great and difficult heights, or climb to be neighbor to a lonely star, or skirt the danger of the principles, or tempt the foam curled breakers, perilous love, adventurous liars, dangerous amateur, or enter the chamber called some flaming god, or leave the world's bounds and where no limits are, meet the heart's compassion, the adorable, or set the world ablaze with the inner fire.
Thank you. Actually, the first sentence Mary read belongs to the previous passage, not to that before. And then it goes back to life. There are all the dangers of the flood of the nether life force. But on the other hand, if our life is too much under control, then all these other wonderful possibilities are missing. We need the dynamism of the life force to tempt the great and difficult heights. We want to climb up, to be neighbor to a lonely star, to some high, distant truth, or to face all kinds of dangers, to enjoy adventure and danger. And there's the possibility, it's an allusion to the mother of the Pandavas in the Mahabharata, who was allowed to call into her chamber some flaming god. She called the sun god, and he gave her firstborn son, Karna. If the life forces too much controlled by reason, we will never do anything dangerous like that. We will not aim to leave the world's bounds and to meet with the heart's passion, the adorable. We will never dare to set the world ablaze with the inner fire. So in this realm where Savitri is passing through now, it is like that. It is too limited. Perhaps we can aim to complete the section. Who's next? It's a downstroke, he said.
Her chastened epithet in the prose of life. She must fill with color just a sanctioned space. Not break out of the cabin of the idea, nor trespass into rhythms too high or vast. Even when it soared into idle air, thought's flight lost not itself in heaven's blue. It drew upon the skies a patterned flower of disciplined beauty and harmonic life. A temperate, vigilant spirit in the world life, its acts were tools of the considering thought, too cold to take fire and set the world ablaze, or the careful reasons. Diplomatic moves, testing the means to a prefigured end, or at the highest pitch, some calm will's plan, or a strategy of some high command within to conquer the secret treasures of the gods, or win for a masked king some glorious world, not a reflex of the spontaneous self, an index of the being and its moods, a winding of conscious spirit, a sacrament of life's communion with the still supreme, all its pure movement on the eternal road. Thank you.
Chagam, if a life force is controlled too much by reason and mind, then it loses its fullness.
Yes, and it loses its capacity. If we look at the lines, lines 338, Sri Aurobindo says, "What it is not, if it's too, and what life is not, if it's controlled too much by the reason." And he implies what it can be, a reflex of the spontaneous self, an index of the being and its moods, a winging of conscious spirit.
So it's okay to take the control properly of the life and let the life flow?
No. What he's suggesting is that the life can be an instrument of the soul and the spirit.
Okay, so it has to be replaced by it.
If that's what it does, then it can be something wonderful.
It's a delicate balance, isn't it? I mean, you can't just let the life force do whatever it wants.
No, then he showed us how dangerous that is. And so there has to be some control of the reason. But what Savitri is doing, she is searching for her soul. These are stages that she's passing through on this entry into the inner countries. These are the different possibilities that one meets on the way. So for life to be truly what it should be, it has to be an instrument of the soul and the spirit. Yes, sorry, Patti.
I wanted to mention, I don't know if all of you went to the Sages and Saints exhibition they had recently in Ashram. But for the first time, there was a print out there from a scripture that I had not seen before, the Charaka Samhita of Ayurveda. So it was entitled Codes of Good Conduct. So when I mentioned this to one Ashramite who works in the school, he told me, oh, India doesn't have any Ten Commandments like this. And I jokingly said, yeah, there are 24. But it turns out, Sampada's Sanskritist there, he said, oh, there are hundreds of them. I only took 24. But if I can just briefly mention, I want to read a few of these, which I think would help Europe right now. He said, one should be of nature of good conduct.
Would you speak slow?
Yes, sorry. One should be friendly with all beings. One should have positive attitude. Initiate conversations without reservation. Remain cheerful. Be gentle and agreeable. Be hospitable in entertaining guests. Speak only when necessary. Have control on oneself, etc. One should cherish no fear within. See? Be humble. Be aspire to be wise. Make effort to be skillful. Be of great perseverance. See, many of these qualities we can see in these people who are coming through Europe. To me, they're like the Aurobindos of the world. You know, they want a better life. But this is my favorite, number 19. One should cling to the truth. So this one Mother has written on the staircase when we go for darshan, you know. One should be peaceful, look forward to the qualities that bring peace, remove intolerance from within, be tolerant of the harsh words of others, and finally, make sincere efforts to annihilate the causes of attachment and repugnance.
So these are ideals.
Mm.
These are recommendations, things to aim at. But eventually, what we hope is that we won't have a list of rules of things that we should do. Spontaneously, all the parts of the being will follow the soul's impulses, and that's being charioteered by Sri Krishna. Hmm? You're in the chariot with him, and he takes you where you have to go and tells you who you have to, what you have to aim at. It's so these are very nice, and they show us a wonderful basis for some of the best things in Indian culture.
I wish I could send this to UNESCO, because you know most of the problems of the world, no, they're problems in the mind first before they manifest in the world. No?
But how to change that? That's the problem.
Well, it's
all
like
these things depend really on a change of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no use saying one should not. Until really one can say, in this way you can change your consciousness. This, if you do this, this will help you change your consciousness.
But the change of consciousness anyway takes place, but maybe through discipline it will be a bit faster.
No, I think up to the age 14, mother was not against us. Because I asked an ex-student who told me he was a wild boy. He told me this himself. So I said, did mother ever give you any guides of conduct? Because he was raised in the school here from age 3 or whatever. He said, oh yes, all the time she was telling you. So I think she says from age 14 you are not supposed to tell children. They're supposed to be independent. But hopefully before age 14 they will have some guidelines.
Imbue these.
Yes, yes.
Guidelines.
Because that's why those children in the art gallery were telling each other, don't put your hands on the wall like that. You know, they knew because they'd already been told, but they were receptive.
Kind of the way of being invitational rather than telling as an authority, you know, you kind of woo, you know, that delicate life as it's emerging in the world, so that you're, you know, they have to, they will, you know, and that's not like you should, it's more of the same.
Because these are not guidelines from reason, they're from the soul. It's written by rishis of old, you know, because they knew even the human nature, they knew very well.
But we shouldn't shrivel them to scoliast lines either. We shouldn't make them into copy-paste device. I think that was the wonderful thing with mothers dealing with everybody.
I liked also in Audible today the interview on spirituality in Auroville, also what you said, Sharava, that the schools are there to give orientations. No? And then I thought, I know it from Germany, if you don't give an orientation where to go, then they oriented on cars, money, and all this, what is running around. So that is an unconsciousness not to give orientations. Yeah? Because then you give the free place to the normal ones.
I think it's by interacting with the people or the children. And when you see them off course, you get them back on course gently. If you just sit for an hour and they have to sit, you know, now listen to the rules, I mean, they're going to be, you know, not interested. That's what I think. But I was amazed to discover that, so I thought it was a great thing.
It's from which Veda?
Pardon me?
From which Veda?
It's from the Charaka Samhita, which is Ayurveda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that's something that most of us don't know hardly anything about, you see? So India, to me, has to step up to the plate and not just have Gita and Upanishad. They have to tell all of their truth of how to live, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
Because most people in the world, they're off track.
I have many times experienced with 4 and 5 year olds. Two children are arguing over a pencil or whatever it is, and then you are there in a loving, supportive way, and you try to think, well, now what should I do now? But I like what she said, be invitational more than do this. I said, give the pencil back now.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to give the pencil back now? And almost always they're ready, because you invited them. They say,
yeah. Their own soul force has to come out. That's because they know, and they have the power within. And so you're really asking, are you ready to listen to yourself now?
Shall we close listening to Mother reading some passages?
From beginning on?
What line did you start on?
243. Okay. Yes, it's pure movement on the eternal road. This is these lines, 38 to 42, a wonderful indication of the true vital.
Of the true?
The true life force, the true vital, the sacrament of life's communion with the still supreme. All its pure movement.
The course of the hills borderland she passed, where life dips into the subconscious dust. All struggles from matter into chaos of mind. A swarm with dimensional entities and fluttering shapes, a vague half-bodied soul, and crude incontinent force. This state now threatened, thus she pushed from her, approaching loom. A giant head of life, ungoverned by mind or soul, subconscious vast.
that stain up, for I seek my soul.
Thanks to Sherwin.